I think what we, I think one of the things that you get a sense of is the degree of care.
Yeah.
How much did this group of people care to make this and make it right, whether you're going to see it or not? And they didn't do it for themselves. It's in service to the people that are going to use or buy the product. And I think there's something, the humanity of that, I think is extraordinary.
Welcome to Hulkast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elijah. Joining me today, he's been weeping and mumbling since the Johnny Ive news broke. Leander Caney is here.
No, Johnny.
Also with us, he's already started writing Leander Caney's newest book, Evans, Hanky, and Alan Dye, the wizards who took Apple's design to the next level. Lewis Wallace is here.
Yeah, this is going to be a winner. Going to be a winner.
So we're recording this. I feel like we're all kind of morose because we're recording this right on the cusp of the breaking news about Johnny Ive leaving Apple officially. It's happening. You guys probably all already heard about this news already. And, you know, it's funny. We all knew this was coming. They have been preparing and heading this direction for years now. You see him less and less.
Well, these rumors go back 20 years or more.
Yeah, but they have taken decided action over the last several years. You don't see him on stage anymore. His deep Vs are missing from the product videos. You never see the guy. He's been totally ghosted.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like he's already gone.
Yeah, true enough. I'd say for the last 2-3 years, yeah. He definitely has taken a little bit of a lesser role.
But he's still officially been there.
Right.
So they're kind of walking people, getting people used to his departure one small step at a time. And now it's official. He's officially leaving. So we'll be talking about that. And we've got a bunch of other Apple stories here that I'm not even sure we're going to have time to make it through all this stuff. In fact, there's no way, because this Johnny Ive story is one of the biggest stories. Well, I think this is probably the biggest story since Steve Jobs passed away.
Right.
This is Steve Jobs' counterpart. And to me, it's emblematic of the official, well, Steve Jobs' legacy has officially ended now at this point. I know that sounds kind of strange because he's been gone for, what, 7 years now? 6 years now? But you had Johnny Ive there carrying on his legacy, and he was still acting on in Steve Jobs' behalf, and now he's leaving as well, so it's going to be a major change for the company. Let's see. Before we dive in, because I'm getting ahead of myself here, let me give a quick thanks to Netgear for supporting this episode. When's the last time you upgraded your home's Wi-Fi? You're not still using an Apple Airport Express, are you? It's time to churn your Wi-Fi up a notch with Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K, it's like giving your streaming the VIP treatment. You'll enjoy buffer-free streaming and zero lag, no matter how many devices are connected to your network. Plus, you'll be shocked when you move to a modern router, how much broader your coverage is over your house, all those dead spots, poof, gone. You'll be getting faster speeds all throughout your home. You'll be shocked, actually. You'll be quite surprised. Upgrade your router at netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again. netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Did that have a fresh feeling? Did I read that in a young way?
So fresh.
I almost went full Tim Cook on that. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again, y'all. When he goes into that whisper passion mode, you know what I'm saying? Leander, we got to start with you because you literally wrote the book on Johnny Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products. What did you think when the news broke?
I was like, whoa, man, my God. I really didn't expect it. I thought he'd be there forever until he retired. Really?
I thought they would go into his office and just find him dead at his desk, and right. That would be the end of Johnny Ive's legacy at Apple. You know?
Yeah. I thought he would be there till the end. I mean, it's going to be, it's really weird. You know, I read the FT story. They seem to be the ones that broke the news, and Apple put out a press release about it. The Financial Times, you know, has obviously been sitting on this for a few days. They've put together like a package of 6 stories, although some of it is fluff. You know, like, you know, Johnny Ive's greatest hits and over 20 years, that kind of stuff. But they have, like, an interview, John, you know, like, in his own words. They did an hour-long interview with him. And, of course, it's typical Johnny Ive. Completely and utterly, you know, sort of semi-abstract. Nothing is really concrete. It's almost impossible to, you know, he doesn't say explicitly why he's leaving or what he's going to do. You know, it's about he's talking about, you know, how he wants to, I don't know. It's so inspecific that I can't even like, I can't even repeat it. It's like, you know, he wants to put love and care into, to continue to put love and care into products. You know, and it doesn't say why he can't continue to do that at Apple and why he would be better off at his own company. But
well, that's the piece that we left out. So he's leaving Apple to start his own company called Love From.
Right.
And they're going to be making technology products as well as...
Well, did he say that, though?
Love-making toys.
He didn't say that. He didn't say what kind of products they're going to be making. He just said that their first customer is going to continue to be Apple.
Yeah, so he's starting his own design firm, and Apple's going to be one of his major clients.
Right.
Which, to me, just means he... is going to be loosely affiliated with Apple. He might be helping them on the major, major products, but by and large, he's done. And people at Apple are going to be the ones building Apple products
right.
going forward. So I think this is kind of a way for him to keep his foot in and help make the transition, but
right.
he's pretty much done.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. That sounds exactly right. You know, reading between the lines, I thought, well, he's tired of the day-to-day, you know, like the sort of the grind, the year in, year out, you know, new iPhone every year. And wants to step outside of that and probably get maybe, you know, like getting into a completely different category of products. But if you're working for a design firm and if you have your own design, why don't he just retire? You know, like if he's doing a design firm, that means he's going to be taking commissions, I presume, from mm-hmm. other companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what kind of products, tech products, you know, architecture stuff? The last big product or the last big project he was working on was Apple Park. And that was like, you know, I mean, that was a good, they were talking about that since 2004. So that was a good, you know, 10, 12 years project that he was working on that. And I know he was like the last couple of years when he sort of stepped away from running the industrial design studio, that was mainly because, you know, so he could concentrate on getting Apple Park done. And then, of course, like a couple of weeks ago, they had the big party with Lady Gaga to celebrate the opening of the park, you know, and the sort of official, you know, the official opening and that they were done. And according to the FT story, he was supposed to be giving a little speech there, but his old man, his dad, had a stroke in the UK, and he flew back to the UK to take care of his dad, to see his dad. And that seems to be, and the FT story, like, you know, says that this is probably the reason why, you know, he finally pulled the trigger. He might have been thinking about it before, but it sort of implied that his dad's health was the reason why he stepped back from Apple. But it's still really puzzling, you know. It's really strange. I mean, he had so much freedom at Apple. I'm pretty sure he did whatever he could, wherever he wanted. You know, he was already sort of above the fray, you know, the daily running of the industrial design studio, being chief design officer. You know, like he already had the freedom to do things like Apple Park, you know, and he was designing benches and that kind of thing, you know, for picnic benches and that kind of stuff, you know. As well as, you know, so he wasn't doing the day-to-day running of the studio and you know, trying to crank out, you know, an iPhone every year or an iPad every year. And, of course, you know, you have massive resources that he won't have when he steps outside of Apple. I mean, Apple has, you know, unlimited amount of money and unlimited amount of resources. So it's kind of a bit strange, a bit weird, a bit of a puzzle.
I think he's done with technology. He's going to do special projects for other companies. I doubt he'll do any more technology. It's not like Samsung's going to come hire him to do the next Galaxy Fold or something. He's going to be doing more esoteric stuff, designing tables for charity events,
well,
working with Mark Newsom to design, you know, glass orbs and things of that nature.
Yeah, like,
but when it comes to actual functional technology and stuff, I think he's going to be done. And how old is the guy? He's probably in his early 50s, I would guess.
Yeah, mid-50s.
Yeah, he's got a bazillion dollars. He has kids. His dad's in poor health. And he is a titan of his industry. He's proved himself and created some of the most important products of the modern era. What else is there to do? Why continue?
Well, because at Apple, you know, I mean, they're rumored to be making a self-driving car. That could be a hugely impactful product.
Yeah.
You know, it could change everything from, you know, not just transportation, but urban planning, you know, desert cities.
Well, maybe he's still involved on that.
Well, right. It certainly seems so. And it's unclear where that project is. You know, lots of rumors that it's dead and done and dusted. But, you know, they just more or less put a self-driving company out of business, Drive.ai. And hired up all their engineers. I mean, that company folded because they were hiring so many of their people. And this news just broke this week. I think that's definitely on track. And he's always been a car nut. I mean, he goes to Goodwood every year, and he's one of the judges there at this, you know, this kind of like classic car festival in the UK, performance car festival. His and you know, one of his earliest projects he did with his dad was refurbishing a car back when he was a school kid. So he's always, and look at all the Bentleys and fancy cars that he drives, Aston Martins. You know, he's like been Aston Martin nut forever. So I don't know. It's weird, you know. Like, don't you think he would step? Wouldn't it be more? It would kind of be more appropriate to step down after that came out. But you know, maybe that's 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. Who knows?
Yeah, and perhaps he doesn't care about making an impact anymore. His ambition has run its course. He, again, look at what he's accomplished. Maybe he has just decided that that's enough. He's done everything that he wanted to do, and he's ready to hand the baton over to another generation of designers and let them have their impact on the company.
Yeah.
And retire and just enjoy his life, enjoy his money. One of the things I always think about, I forget when he said this, but somebody was talking to him about his return to Apple, or maybe this is when he left, and he said, "I'm deeply, deeply tired." And for some reason, that always stuck with me. The guy has been working extraordinarily hard for, who knows, 20 years maybe, and he's just had enough. He's done. He has all this money. He has all these accolades. Well, right, keep going? Like, just quit and enjoy yourself.
Well, right, but so why wouldn't he retire? Why set up a company? Why set up another company?
Well, what are you going to do? Just piddle around your house in your custom designed slippers and watch the Discovery Channel? I mean, the guy's he wants to be busy. Who actually wants to retire and do nothing? Guys with his level of skill, when they retire, they don't want to do nothing. They want to just do what they want to do and not be focused on Apple's priorities, which no matter if he's there even at a high level, that's what he's going to be doing. He's going to be expected to be contributing to Apple, and now he has his complete freedom, and that's worth that has no value, especially when you're as rich as Johnny Ive is.
Right.
You can just do whatever you want now.
I think that's probably true. Like, I think you're right. I think, like you said, it sort of relieves him of his responsibilities at Apple, right? And like reading between the lines, he was talking a lot about the Apple Watch and health and fit and healthcare, and he had this revelation, you know, when he's sitting by his dad's bedside in the hospital, you know, that technology has failed in this area. You know, the technology failed his dad. There wasn't something that could warn him. You know, he wasn't wearing a device that could have warned about the imminent stroke, you know, and saved him from suffering from that. Hmm. So, you know, I think maybe you're right. Maybe he's thinking about, you know, like he said that you know, going to his own company allows him to concentrate more, you know, on, or gives him the freedom to, like, you know, go into projects. He said he wanted to do projects that were much longer term and go much deeper. And so, you know, like you said, having his own firm frees him up from responsibilities at Apple. Maybe it gives him the time to start looking at this sort of healthcare technology, you know, at a little more leisure than he would have had if he continued to work for Apple.
He doesn't have to worry about creating next year's iPhone as soon as the new iPhone comes out.
Right.
And he even, remember in that interview a while back, he said he feels like he's living 2 years in the future. So he's just constantly focused on what's coming up, what's coming next, how are we going to stay ahead? How chamfered do the edges on this phone need to be? So it occupies all of his creativity, all of his time. And it reminds me kind of what Casey Neistat did a while ago. He is a guy that makes videos on YouTube. He used to make videos every single day. And eventually he quit. And he said, "I don't want to do this anymore because I feel like I'm so preoccupied with the daily operation of creating a video that I have no more bandwidth to be creative in any other capacity. And there are other things that I want to do than just make these videos every day," which were incredibly successful. But at a certain point, you have enough money, you have enough fame, popularity, that may not be your driving force anymore. Doesn't it feel like an incredibly heavy day? I just feel like I've been weighed down by this, by this news. It's,
yeah.
it's definitely very sad and it's shocking. It's not quite as of a wallop as when Steve Jobs passed away. I was truly in shock when that happened, right. Even though we were expecting it. I was still totally, totally surprised when it actually happened, and it felt surreal. But this is the end of an era.
Right.
I don't know how else to articulate it with any more weight
than
that.
It's a cliche, but it's very true.
Think of what's... Yeah, I think it's... Apple was Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive working together to create some of the most iconic products that we all know and love, and now they're both gone. And as I was mentioning earlier, I don't think I articulated it very well, but Steve Jobs passed away, but he was living on through Johnny Ive. And those two were very synonymous. But now Johnny's leaving too. So who's going to take that role? Right. Who's going to be the tastemaker at Apple?
Right.
Who's going to be pointing at that product that you created and saying, no, that's crap. You need to start over. That was at least in my opinion, maybe Leonard, you could tell me if I'm right or wrong, but that was one of Steve Jobs' most important roles, and probably Johnny Ive's as well, is just being a tastemaker and knowing what worked and what didn't. And now both those guys are gone. What do you think this means for Apple, Leander? I know that's kind of a lofty question.
Well, it's difficult to say, you know, like I think you're right. When Steve passed, these last 6-7 years, in terms of products, were kind of really they weren't the Tim Cook era. They were sort of the Johnny Ive era. He took over, I think, that role that Steve had had before he died, which is like sort of being Apple's chief product officer. You know, like all of them, he'd have meetings all day with the design team and the engineers and the software folks, you know, and he was overseeing, the software look and feel as well as the hardware. And the one who's making the decisions, you know, like I said, when they have a new product like the iPhone, Jobs is the one who could turn around and say, okay, you know, this is what we're going to develop. We're going to work on this. And then for 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is, you know, behind the scenes, push it. And I presume that, you know, Johnny Ive had that role until he stepped back and to take care of Apple Park, you know, at Apple. But Apple's never been, you know, like a one-man band. It's always been, you know, the ideas have always come from all sorts of places. And a lot of the ideas have always, you know, come from the grassroots. And one of the genius things about Johnny Ive's design studio was that it was somewhat removed from, you know, the Apple bureaucracy. It functioned almost like an independent design studio, which is, and in fact, you know, the guy that set it up, Bob Bruner, that's what he used as a model, was like a client-based, a design studio, what would you call it? Like an independent design studio that had clients, but it only had one client, and that was Apple. And he made sure that he had it set off-site, you know, so that they wouldn't be interfered with, and they would be given a brief or whatever, and they'd work on these designs and without the interference from the engineers and from the marketers and, you know, the bureaucracy of the company. And it always kind of retained a little bit of that feel, you know, under Johnny Ive, even though it moved back into the main building and became a lot more integrated. And I think that continues, you know. He said it like in these interviews when he was leaving, you know, that the thing he was most proud of was the team that and the culture, you know, that he's put together. And we'll see, you know, whether Evan's hanky. I mean, she's been there for years. It's unclear. She keeps such a low profile. It wasn't even clear when she joined, but she's probably been there at least 20 years.
And oh, that long?
Yeah, I think
it made it seem like she was like had been there for five or six years when
No, she's been there for forever. You know, she goes back to that kind of like there was a core team that Johnny Ive recruited, some of them were there when he joined in '92, but then a whole bunch of more joined like in the mid '90s, and that was kind of like the core team that were there that were responsible for like, you know, the iMac, the PowerBook, you know, the iPhone, the iPad, and all these other, you know, groundbreaking products. There was a core team of about 20 designers under Johnny Ive that were there. But of course, like in the last couple of years, a lot of them have been leaving. You know, we've seen Rico Zorkendorf leave. We've seen Danny Costa leave. Daniel Delius, Chris Stringer, who was like the principal designer of the iPhone, he's left. So a lot of that core team, I would say, possibly half of them, have left in the last few years. So there's been a bit of a shakeup, you know, there, it seemed to be accelerated. You know, that three of them left. Three of these core designers left earlier this year. So it seems to be going through a little bit of a you know. And there's been quite a few changes there, but of course they've been working together for a long time. Who knows? I don't know. It's hard to say. It's like, is it just a lot of them have sort of, you know, they've been working there for so long. Most of them had almost all their careers there, and all of them have, you know, sort of expressed a desire to do something else, which is what, you know, you kind of hear from Johnny Ive too. Anyway, the original question was, you know, like, do you need someone like Steve Jobs, like a chief product officer? We'll see. it's not an easy answer, I don't think, because I think there's a lot of myths and a lot of misconceptions about, you know, how Steve Jobs worked and what he did for the company. And of course, it's much bigger, much more mature, much more complex, many more things going on. Completely different market. They're moving into all kinds of different things now. You know, there's definitely a de-emphasis on things like products. It's turning more towards services. You know, that could be part of the dynamic that's going on here as well. So I don't know. And there's no easy answer, I don't think. Did that help?
I'm getting
a little rambling there.
Yeah, no, that was good. I'm also laughing because I'm getting tweets. Everyone's finding out about the story as we're recording, and someone just tweeted me, Francisco. He says, now that Johnny Ive released his greatest achievement, the cheese grater, he's peaked.
Yeah,
it is one of the finest computers I've ever seen. So if you're gonna have that be your magnum opus, it's not a bad one to leave on. Well, you know what I mean?
One thing, before I forget, I just wanted to mention about, you know, like having a design agency, you know, having an agency that works for clients. You know, that was the thing that drove Johnny Ive crazy. That's where he started his career, working in London with Tangerine, with Clive Grenier and a couple of others. You know, they would get these commissions. One of them was for like Ideal Standard, which is like a British bathroom fixtures manufacturer. And he spent months working on these really elaborate designs for a set of it was a toilet, a sink, and a bathtub, like a whole suite, you know. And he went back to studying, like, you know, Roman hydrology and Greek water gardens and Egyptian water gardens, and, you know, like, he went back to look at the history of irrigation and water and water baths, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and came up with these beautiful designs. And it was on in England a charity day called Red Nose Day, where everyone wears these red foam rubber noses to raise money for charity. And so they went to this meeting, and the CEO is wearing this red rubber nose, and he's just trashing, you know, these designs that Johnny Ive worked on for so hard. You know, he said this thing's going to fall off the wall and crush some children or something. You know, it looked really dangerous. You know, this is one of the reasons why he went to Apple, is because, like, as a designer, he pours his heart into these designs, but then it's got to be presented to a client, and if they don't, you know, that's when his power ends. You know, like, he doesn't have any power to see this through, to see it actually a real product. And you know, he had this experience with a lot of the things he designed. You know, they got watered down, they got changed. He didn't have a seat at the table. So I don't know, you know, like, there was a lot of frustration that he expressed with that model. You know, this is why he wanted to be inside a company.
But he's transcended that now. He's so iconic. It doesn't matter what he creates. Everyone is going to kiss his arse.
It's amazing.
Oh,
it's
beautiful. That's the best table I've ever seen. Oh, look at the edges. They're so chamfered. He is like a famous painter now. He's uniquely himself. So no matter what he makes, it's going to be iconic and everyone's going to love it. So he's reached a status where he can just work on whatever he wants, and no one's going to criticize it, especially because, you know, it's going to be like a marble orb. Yeah. How do you criticize an orb? Or like a glass slipper that will probably be
I think that's a very good point. That's a good custom point.
Johnny Ive slipper, you know? I'm happy for him. To have that much money, he's got autonomous cars driving wherever he wants to go. They're powered by Siri and Apple Maps, so he always gets where he's trying to go. They never take him to the wrong place, you know? And he gets just to live his life and enjoy his kids and spend time with his ailing father. And he's got all the money in the world, so his design studio will probably have the most unbelievable technology to create products and, you know, have them be etched out of solid marble and aluminum and everything they have in the design lab now. I doubt that his studio is going to be any worse off. If you had to guess Johnny Ive's net worth, what would you say? I mean, he's got to be close to being a billionaire.
Oh, 10 billion. I saw there were some people on Twitter, just, you know, like, calculating it, and 10 billion was the number they came up with.
You know, there you have it. I'm wondering what's going to happen with Apple too. This is going to be, I was thinking about this right as it broke, and my impression is this is a rebirth for Apple. Steve's gone, Johnny's leaving, and now you have like the Saved by the Bell new class coming up. This is an analogy you guys probably won't get, but you have this new generation of people who are coming up, and now it's their turn to take the reins and drive Apple in the direction that they want to go. And it's a fresh slate. Who knows what they're going to do? Who knows what talent is there? Who knows how different people taking different leadership positions is going to affect the company and affect the products that are created within the company? People are going to have to step up and take these leadership roles. And now we really will find out if the culture that Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive created at Apple, if the culture of Apple is going to be enough to keep it heading in the right direction and creating the products that we all know and love, or if it's going to start to atrophy and we're going to start to see little cracks here and there as they start to put out strange products that no one actually wants to buy.
Well, there's been that criticism recently, you know, like some of the comments I saw were saying, you know, like the MacBook keyboard fiasco, you know, that's a problem that rests squarely on Johnny Ive's shoulders, you know, and his obsession with thinness and is, you know, responsible for that. And and that, you know, some new blood might avoid those kind of things.
That's what I was thinking too. Johnny Ive is so high level that he probably doesn't get any enjoyment out of creating products that are just normal anymore. It reminds me of this concert I went to a long time ago. There's this guitarist named Tim. Oh, I forgot his last name. He plays with Dave Matthews. And the guy is a phenomenon. He's one of the best guitarists alive. And I used to see him play with Dave Matthews, and it was incredible. And then I went and saw him by himself. And it was one of the most bizarre, weird shows I've ever seen in my entire life, because the guy is so good, he can't just play a normal guitar riff and sing. He's playing like all these strange scales and jazz arpeggios and stuff, and it just sounded like noise. And I remember, like, I was kind of far back in the crowd, and this red light came onto the stage, and he kind of disappeared. And then he sprung up from the stage with like this strange hat on. It looked like a clown jester hat with all these like bells and stuff all over it. And the red light was shining on his face, and he played this really horrible chord that gave you intense gas. And that strange analogy, maybe that's kind of where Johnny Ive is. He's just so high level. He's so talented that his taste buds aren't satisfied with things that are normal. He has to create strange products that don't resonate with normal people. So I took the long route to say, maybe you're right. Maybe some fresh blood, some fresh perspective will help them to create some products that resonate more with normal people.
Yeah. You know, we'll see. I mean, there's no shortage of design talent, for my God, you know, at Apple. And, you know, I mean, one of the things about their design studio is that almost all of the decisions, even though Johnny Ive gets all the credit, you know, all the decisions were sort of communal. They had this big kitchen table that all sit around, you know, they would critique these ideas and these designs, and it would be, you know, sort of like a group decision, you know, like almost everything they did was as a group. Although saying that, obviously, you know, like I think obviously some members of the group have more influence than others, and clearly, you know, Johnny Ive was at the top of that totem pole. One of the things that people are worried about is that the new head of the design studio, Evans Hanke, is no longer reporting directly to Tim Cook. She's reporting to Jeff Williams.
And I was going to bring this up.
Yeah, and her counterpart, Alan Dye, who's like the head of the human interface group, you know, so he's kind of the software guy, and she's the hardware, the head of the hardware. So the hardware and software are now reporting to Jeff Williams, who is the COO. And of course, you know, an operations guy, but he's also in charge of wearables, you know, the Apple Watch and the AirPods and the like. So that's interesting, you know, like they're no longer reporting directly up to the CEO, which is how it used to be. People are worried about that.
It seemed like an important part of this story because you used to have Johnny Ive working directly with the CEO, but I think maybe Tim Cook isn't the right guy to be making the decisions with the design group. And it seems like because Jeff Williams has been involved so intricately with the design of the Apple Watch, maybe he's more interested in that type of thing. And maybe that's why they're reporting to him and not to Tim Cook. I don't think it's because they are taking the importance of design down any level inside of Apple. It just seems like maybe Jeff Williams is a better fit.
Yeah, right. So, you know, maybe Jeff Williams is the new product guy. That's what it seems like, huh?
And he seems like he's really interested. In fact, I was just reading that Johnny Ive said that he has been working with Jeff for a long time and he's been intimately involved in all this different product stuff. So, which is funny because when you look at Jeff Williams, he looks exactly like Tim Cook. So you would, I mean, for me, and he has the same position Tim Cook used to have. So to me, he kind of represents that dry, cold, calculating personality. But just because he looks like Tim Cook, I guess he doesn't necessarily mean he is like him at all. Clearly not.
That's not superficial at all. Yeah, no.
I mean, it looks like him, so they must be exactly the same.
Yeah, well, Cook's never pretended that he's a product guy, right? And he's never sort of, you know, made, you know, it's obviously that he's not as intimately involved as Jobs was, you know. And so, yeah, maybe Williams is the new product guru at the sort of...
That's why I always thought that Tim Cook was an interesting choice for CEO. Because he represented such a change in role for the CEO.
Well, sort of.
Steve Jobs was the product guy, and then Tim Cook was an operations guy, and then now you're putting an operations guy and CEO, whereas Apple's supposed to be a product company, right?
Well,
so why don't they elevate someone who is concerned and focused on product?
Well, I think this is what... You know, from the outside, that's what it looked like, and definitely it was in the early days. You know, when Jobs came back and they were in trouble, you know, I mean, it was rebuilt through a series of hit products, wasn't it? The iMac and then the iPod, which really transformed it, then the iPhone, which really made it into a huge giant. But, you know, Cook was really the de facto CEO since probably the mid-2000s, you know, as the company had matured. And Jobs, you know, had more or less sort of handed that, even though Jobs was the CEO in name, he'd kind of handed that role off to Cook a long time before Cook became the official CEO. You know what I mean? So I think around that time is when Apple transitioned from this kind of, you know, from this company that was reliant upon one hit product after another into a much more mature company, you know, that you see today, where it's getting revenue from all different kinds of areas, and things like services are super important, you know, as important as you know, come up with new hit products every year. Like it's not Apple's not dependent upon having like a huge hit, is it? You know, year after year, the iPhone is a massive, huge business, and it's like
that's
sustainable.
Point.
So, and it's much more complex, you know, than it ever used to be. And it's a huge, huge company. I mean, it's the world's biggest company. And it needed someone, I think, with Cook skills, you know, who could do this, who could run an organization across all these different businesses, have a real eye for detail. You know, I mean, like, Jobs never hated that kind of stuff. He never had the patience. He didn't have the temperament. But he had the fucking, he was smart enough to be able to hire someone like Cook who did and hand over the reins to him. Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, Cook doesn't really get the credit for, like, saving Apple. We go all the way back to in the late 90s when Jobs came back, you know. He's always been played second, you know, he's always in the shadows, always very quietly working behind the scenes. But he had a lot to do. He had almost everything to do with, like, you know, stabilizing the company, sorting out the operation, sorting out the manufacturing operation, you know, saving the company a ton of money so it didn't go bankrupt and out of business, and then building it up into this giant, you know, machine that it is today.
You could almost say that Tim Cook is a genius, and he took them to the next level. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's catchy. That's real catchy. Where'd you get that from?
He's an operations wizard that took Apple to the next level. Lewis, you're just sitting there filing your nails. Do you have anything that you want to add?
Yeah.
Any thoughts, any feelings, any emotions? Do you have a single tear running down your cheek? Are you still there?
I'm just...
More importantly, are you still there?
I did have to go check the door. Yeah, you know, it's weird. Can you imagine working at a place for 30 years? I mean, I guess he hasn't been there quite 30 years, but... I mean, think about that. Think about how long that is, working at the same place. And I don't know. I mean, if you were working there and thinking, oh, you know, like say you're a young person and you want to move up and, you know, there's this layer of people who've been there for decades. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I think it probably is good that they're letting some, you know, new blood. New blood is such a weird term, but... you know, you gotta. Sometimes people have to move on so that other people can move up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, just at the last few events they've had. I mean, he's barely been there. If anything, it's like some disembodied voice. I mean, I don't really know how much time. His whole relationship with Apple has seemed strange to me for the last few years. I mean, going away and then coming back and. You know, whatever, not doing day-to-day, then doing day-to-day, now he's, you know, what? It's just odd. I mean, I've never talked to the guy, Leander. You've met him and things, so he seems like a strange guy. I mean, how many hours a day do you suppose he spent just researching things, like, you know, getting into horology for months at a time or
whoa,
something?
Whoa, doing hold Apple. On now. I don't think he has that much free time.
It's just, I don't know. I've always been curious exactly. I mean, I have a hard time imagining what a day in the life of Johnny Ive actually looks like.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. He should write a book.
He has a chauffeur-driven car, you know, that takes him down to Cupertino from his $17 million house here in Pacific Heights in San Francisco with an amazing view of
he's
the bay.
He's got a $17 million house?
Yeah, him and his wife bought a house over in, it's called on Billionaire's Row. Which
he's the only one that lives there.
It's kind of weird though. It's like it's actually doesn't seem to be that from the street level. It's kind of a small. It's not a huge mansion, you know. It's not the kind of thing you would imagine you'd get for $17 million. But it's on a steep hill, so it goes like five stories down the back. So it is a big place, but it's kind of like sandwiched between these two other houses. It almost looks like a terraced house. You know, there's actually no gap between the houses on the
left
and right.
He's got neighbors close to his
house? Yeah, and they're attached. You know, it's kind of odd.
Wait, so he lives in like a townhome between two other houses?
And they're attached. It's a terraced house. It literally, you know, like attached to them. To the house.
That's surprising.
But it's a mansion, and it has the most stunning views. I mean, of the bay and Alcatraz and the Golden Gate Bridge and you know, the marina, the San Francisco down below it. It's but anyway, and it's I imagine it's a huge pain actually to get to Cupertino from there, because you've got to drive all the way across town and there's no like freeway. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, surface traffic. But there's a chauffeur-driven driver who drives him in a Bentley, and he sits in the back, you know, and he now owns Steve Jobs' jet. He bought Steve Jobs' old jet, his Gulfstream. So that's his private jet that he jets around in. And he seems to be like turn up all over the place. He's always giving talks in London or, you know, New York or different places around the world. It seems as though he's not definitely, you know, he's not clocking in every day, punching the clock at Apple.
Yeah, he's got probably next to the guy who plants all the trees and just walks around and waters stuff, he's probably got one of the best jobs at Apple. The aviary guy. That guy has a great job. He's probably making like $100,000 just walking around pruning trees and stuff on one of the most beautiful campuses in the state. Well, we should probably move on because this horse has been sufficiently beaten. But final thoughts, the rebirth of Apple, the start of a new era, and now we get to see what their other talent can truly do. Without their North Stars, Steve's gone, Johnny's going to be gone. What is Apple going to be able to accomplish now? That's the question. That's what we have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there to say? You know, I hope that I hope it's a good move for him. Yeah. I hope it's a good move for Apple. Curious to see what he does next. I hope it's not just all Christmas trees with no ornaments.
I think that's exactly what it's going to be. I'm almost 100% sure that's exactly what's next for Johnny Ive, is just stuff for rich people, for charities,
golden
stuff that
shotguns.
You, yeah, it's going to be a bunch of weird esoteric stuff that no one would actually ever want to buy unless they were super rich. And it's going to be glass slippers and Christmas trees and tables and benches.
Gold
and
watches.
I think it's going to be a flying car, man. He's probably been driven mad by the fact that the flying car didn't exist to get him from his billionaire house to Cupertino.
Right.
Well, maybe he knows something that we don't, because he's working 2 years in the future, right? So in 2 years, he knows
we'll
that
see.
We're going to have the Apple car. Okay, let's see here. We got a ton of stories. Clearly, we're not going to have time to do all these. I mean, look at all this. We can't do all this. We definitely got to do the last one, though, because this one was one of the best Apple stories that I've seen this week. And let me at least mention, well, let me touch on these two stories just real fast. 16-inch MacBook Pro could arrive sooner than you think. A new 16-inch MacBook Pro is coming this fall, probably in September, according to analyst IHS Markit. They claim that Apple will unveil the new laptop at the company's September media event alongside the new iPhone, which they have never unveiled a new MacBook Pro at a September event, so this would be a first time for that. But you know what? They just unveiled the new Mac Pro at WWDC, so anything could happen. We have no idea. The new laptop will supposedly feature a 30x72x1920 resolution, up from the 2880 1800 resolution. It will also use a LCD display rather than switching to OLED. This report matches what Ming-Chi Kuo said earlier this year, that a new MacBook Pro between 16 and 16.5 inches would be arriving before the end of the year. Of course, he went on to amend that and say it was actually coming next year. So we'll have to see which one of these guys is right. But it is worth noting that these analysts from IHS have been correct in the past regarding both iPad and iPhone specs. So they're not just some unknown blog that's just throwing out facts.
Yeah, I understand.
So it's very, very possible we might actually see a new MacBook Pro. What's that, Lewis?
There's something about, you know, all new design, right? I mean, it's supposed to have the touch bar.
Well, let's hope they all new design that right off the new MacBook Pro and give us an option to not have it. But yes, in all
keyboard
likelihood, it's going to be there. Or maybe they'll figure out a way to make it more useful, you know. But wouldn't it be great? They're not going to do this, but wouldn't it be great if they gave you an option to not have the touch bar and just bring back the function keys and, well, just that. Maybe lower the price a little bit.
Lower the price?
Well, that's why they raised the price. One of the reasons they raised the price, $300, when they introduced the touch bar, because it included this new piece of technology that, well, I'm not going to start complaining about it, that everyone loves and everyone finds useful in their daily lives and can't live without. How about phrasing it that way? Okay, so keep your eyes open for that. Also, Apple just poached one of the world's premier ARM CPU architects. I thought this was really interesting, very boring, but interesting nonetheless. One of the top CPU architects in the world has just joined Apple's team. Well, what do you think about that? Mike Filippo, who created some of ARM's most impressive CPUs over the last few years, was hired by Apple last month, signifying the company could be getting ready to switch Mac from Intel to ARM CPUs. Check out this guy's resume. And I want to read you a couple of the lines from his resume, and you can tell me if this makes any sense whatsoever. So Mark Filippo spent his first 5 years at Intel. He's a electrical engineer, CPU architect. Man, what a job. What do you do for a living? Oh, I make CPUs. He spent 8 years after that at AMD, and then he spent 10 years at ARM as the lead architect creating the chips that have been competing with Apple's chips. So he's one of the foremost CPU architects in the entire world. I was looking at this guy's LinkedIn page, and I just want to read you some of the stuff that he has in his resume and tell me if this makes any sense to you whatsoever. This is in his position at ARM. He says, lead architect at Zeus, ARM's next generation Neoverse infrastructure focused CPU. Huh? Okay. Lead architect at Hercules, ARM's next generation high-end mobile CPU. Okay, that one's not so bad. How's this one? Chief architect of 24-core, 96-thread, supercomputing, HPC, SoC, extensive interaction with external customers on SoC definition, including HPC-specific features and performance power targets. Oh, I just got a sharp pain in my bowels.
Rolls off
I have no
tongue.
Idea what any of that means. But that's why this guy is making the big bucks at Apple, because he actually knows.
He knows more acronyms than anyone else in the entire chip industry. I knew one of them, SoC.
Oh, that's a system on a chip, right?
There you go, ding, bang, ding. Bingo.
Boom, baby, I'm ready for my job at Apple as a CPU architect. You know, you got to be a high-level smart guy when you can just put this gobbledygook on your resume, and it doesn't even make any sense to most mere mortals, but it gets you a job as a lead architect on I would imagine it's going to be CPUs at Apple. So this could be an indicator that Apple is about to get even more serious about ARM chips. And, of course, they have them in their iOS devices, so it's not that unusual for them to want to hire a guy like this. But he's one of the foremost experts, so maybe this has some implications for the Mac. Okay, let's wrap up with this story. Apple is warning customers that App Store gift cards can't pay your income taxes, Lewis. Did you fall for this scam?
No, I did not.
Did you hear about this scam?
No, I actually didn't see this story. And when I clicked the link in the show notes, it was the wrong story. So, no, I hadn't heard about this, actually.
Well, this is good for us to review with our listeners, because apparently this is a big scam and people are falling for it. We want to give you a heads up that you cannot pay your U.S. income taxes with Apple App Store gift cards, okay? They're only good for the Apple Store.
Well, who... Okay.
You can't use them anywhere else but Apple. The IRS won't take them. You can't use them at Denny's.
There's a scam going around where they're trying to convince people that you can do this.
Well, I didn't know you can't pay your taxes with gift cards from iTunes. Did you? I mean, I would have just assumed. I mean, it's the IRS. You got to pay your taxes. I'm like, well, look, I don't have cash, but you can buy $85 worth of iTunes music with this card.
And
I mean, the guy's like, all right, that's a good point.
Who is dumb enough to fall for this?
What? How dare you?
How does it work? What
okay,
happens?
Let me. Yeah. Okay. Enough preamble. Let
Sorry,
me tell the
I
story.
Just, I just read the scam and I keep shaking my head. I can't believe.
Well,
it.
I mean, once you hear about the scam, you can see why people fall for it. So Apple is now warning customers up front that iTunes gift cards cannot be used to pay taxes, as a number of fraud calls have been ramping up. An all too common scam involves an unsuspected mark receiving a call from an unknown number, sometimes spoofed as the IRS. That's scary, right? You're like, oh my gosh, it's the IRS, and he wants my gift cards.
Don't answer.
That's what I do when the IRS calls. I just don't answer. I say, no habla inglés. Of course, they probably have Spanish-speaking people there. Once the call is answered, the fraudster, claiming to be from a government agency, informs the subject that they have unpaid taxes. Ooh, that's scary. And they must pay up, lest they be arrested. Give me your iTunes gift cards or you're getting arrested. One of the ways presented to the mark to settle up is the option to pay the balance by way of iTunes gift cards. Makes sense. They tell you to go to your local store, buy an iTunes gift card, and then read them the number over the phone so that they can have your taxes paid off. Needless to say, this is not a legitimate way to pay the IRS, and the IRS does not accept iTunes gift cards as a form of currency. We just saved somebody out there, Lewis.
I'm very glad that you did that because, you know, yeah, this sounds like...
It seems kind of, what kind of dumb scam is this? Why don't they just get the person to read their credit card over the phone?
Because people are too smart to know. They're not going to read you their credit card.
Oh, but an iTunes gift card?
But an iTunes gift card, that's totally safe, right?
Right, yeah. Of course, well, oh, yeah, that's legit. Yeah, the IRS, iTunes gift card.
I would love to hear that conversation. They're like, you want me to get you a gift card? He's like, well, yes, ma'am. We at the IRS, we like to listen to music. And so it's a great way for you to pay your taxes because you get us an iTunes gift card, we mark your taxes balance down to zero, and we get to listen to the new Jay-Z album. And you're like, that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
When you explain it that way, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Who would even go to the effort to do this? I mean, who even really uses iTunes gift cards anymore?
I do. I use them all the time. Whenever they go on... I call people and I tell them they owe money to the IRS. So I've got thousands of dollars worth. But you can use them to, you get a discount on them. So every year when Costco or another company puts them on sale, I buy them and then I use them to buy apps and I use them to pay for my iCloud photo storage throughout the year. So it's one of the only ways to get a discount on those services. It's a great way to get a discount on cloud services. Lewis.
Huh. Yeah, okay, I get it. I just, it seems like another thing that's kind of going the way of the dodo, really. I mean, I guess apps. People still buy apps. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't think I've spent $85 on apps in my entire life.
No, but the iCloud 2-terabyte photo storage is $10 a month.
All right, then.
And now it includes HomeKit camera support for up to 5 cameras.
I didn't know you could use a gift card to pay for that, so that's handy.
Oh, yeah. And at Christmas time, it's 25% off. So you're 25% off.
I thought it was always like 15% off.
No, it's 15 throughout the year, but at Christmas time, Tim Cook, he really gets crazy.
All right.
And he marks down everything 25%.
Put this on my calendar.
Yeah. He does it in his spreadsheet in numbers. And when he hits save, all the changes are pushed out to Best Buy and all the other organizations. Very sophisticated system. All right. So there's a tip for you. Don't get caught by the scammers. Keep those iTunes gift cards for yourself. I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come commiserate with us about the loss of Johnny Ive, we're all on Twitter. We're there to comfort you. I'm at Erifon. Leander is at L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. You take this one, Leander.
Next time, Sir Johnny Ive.
That was like a perfect Johnny Ive impression.
I've been working on it for years.
Preparing for this very moment.
Right.
One day he's going to quit, and I know that I'm going to need that. Toodles.
No, he's a bit more sort of down to earth. He's awfully nice, though. He's super sincere.
Can you tell us, for the bonus track, can you tell us what's Johnny Ive really like? Can you tell us a story that you never told on the story on the show here before? You've met him in person. I know you have.
Well, I can't remember what I've told on the story. I mean,
you've told
the last time I met him,
none of the meetings.
He made me promise not to tell anyone about it, so...
Okay, well, don't tell that one. Of course, now he's gone, so... You know,
well, he's not gone. I suppose he is. I don't know.
Tell me. Can you tell
me
any
promise,
Johnny?
So I can't really be.
Okay.
You know,
well, don't break that one. Can you tell us about any other Johnny Ive stories?
Well,
because you guys have known each other on and off for years and years and years and years, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, we've met a few times, and he's always super friendly. And you know, I mean, one time. this is years ago when I was working for Wired. You know, I was at Macworld, and they and Steve Jobs introduced the Power Mac G5.
Mm.
Remember that? It was the aluminum tower.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one with the cheese grater.
I loved that computer. Beautiful computer.
Well, that was funny because I remember sitting in the audience, you know, and he was talking about, and when it came out of the stage, I think it came up out of the stage, you know, and it was like 2001, you know, when the monkeys first encounter the black obelisk from outer space.
Uh-huh.
It's like they're in the presence of this super powerful alien technology, and they're just sitting there completely dumbstruck. Because this thing was super powerful. I mean, Apple did an ad. Actually, it was for the previous one. But it was like they were completely mesmerized. And I saw over to the left, you know, there was Johnny Ive was there, and they had one outside in the hall for like in a case for people to look at. And he took me out there, and I was just looking for like a couple of lines, you know, for this story. And he gave me like a 20-minute tour of the whole thing. And he was so into it. I mean, he was he was drooling over the thing, and was geeking out over every single detail. And there was a whole ton of stuff, you know, that they don't really talk about that he told me for this story. The latch, you know, on the door, and the cooling mechanism, all this kind of stuff. And he was so into it. He was really, really into it. It was really fascinating to watch, you know, like how pleased he was with all these different things that they'd been working on. And they'd worked on that machine for a long time. And that was the first time they actually designed the motherboard to make it look good and all the interior. So the industrial design team, that was the first machine that they'd actually worked on the guts of the machine as well, because it had a door, and they figured that, you know, people would take it off and they'd actually put it on the desk and leave it open. So they wanted to make it look as good on the inside as it was on the outside.
That's funny that you should mention that, because they did that on the new Mac Pro too, and that's something that I forgot to mention when we covered that computer. I was looking at it, and even the motherboard is beautiful. They clearly put design work into the motherboard itself. It's black, and all the circuits are beautiful and parallel, right, and running all along in this like really organized fashion. Even that's impressive.
I know, yeah. It's bonkers. It's crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy.
I feel like you and Johnny Ive have a special relationship. Like, he, whenever you've talked about him in the past, it seems like he always gives you extra time and shows you stuff that he doesn't show other people. Maybe it's because you're British. And
right, we have such a special relationship. They gave me advance notice about him quitting. Oh, wait.
Well,
that's right.
Maybe you'll get invited to his going away party. But
actually, did I tell that story when I did meet him at a party at Macworld?
No, you didn't tell me that.
We had a bunch of drinks.
Did he hold your feet while you chugged off the keg?
Well, I chugged a few, and then I had to go to something else, and I was so drunk I left my bag behind.
Uh-huh.
And then this was kind of early in the evening, you know. I don't want to say how early. I think it was probably about 6 o'clock or something.
You mean a half hour after the party started.
And about 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, like I was staggering around, and I went up to the bar at the Fairmont Hotel here in San Francisco. And he was coming out of the bathroom with my bag slung over his shoulder.
Whoa!
He'd been carrying it around all night.
Looking for you.
Yeah.
See, I was right.
That's why I was like, oh, thanks, Johnny.
Did he take you home back to his place and tuck you in and let you sleep off?
He just gave me my... No, because he was with his wife, so he couldn't do any of that kind of stuff. But I was really... I was just surprised that, like, someone who's like, you know, I mean, he was a big wig and a big shot then.
Yeah.
You know, but he's got no ego, you know, like he's a very down to earth guy. He was very, very humble about it.
Surprisingly down to earth for as rich and powerful as he is. Because
right.
If he wanted to have you killed, he could.
Oh, easily.
And
yeah,
they would never even find out that it was him. You would just be gone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You'd be in the most beautiful urn ever designed. He'd probably have it sent to your family's house. Custom Johnny Ive urn.